Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Welcome back to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart with Brian Myers.
Hey, has the weather been fantastic or what?
Today it's great.
Well, it was good yesterday, too.
Yeah, yesterday wasn't bad.
I got out on the lawnmower yesterday. I was actually enjoying cutting the grass.
Were you?
It's springtime. This is springtime's finally here.
I had to break down and actually hire somebody to do my lawn.
What's that? What's the deal there?
Well, I let it get a little bit out of hand. Because, you know, I've just been busy working, and then it's been raining. You know, times when I have had time. And I hadn't mowed it yet. And it was like...
So you had a local farmer come bale the hay.
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was just a little too much for my little mower to handle. So,
I got out again yesterday mowing the lawn, and I was actually enjoying it. So, I mean, I think spring is finally here. But the good news right now, however, is that you have not had any breakdowns lately, right?
Well, I've been driving your vehicle.
Well, sometimes you have breakdowns in somebody else's car, too.
That's true. That's true. My daughter's transmission's having issues there, so we got that.
Yeah, but you haven't been driving
her car. I've been driving her car, so that's not on me.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, this man is cursed when he drives one of my vehicles.
Apparently.
Just
and sometimes my own, too, so, yeah.
Okay.
We were just talking about how I'm probably going to, next week I'm driving out to Moline, and it'll probably break down in Moline.
Don't say it. Please don't say it. We've got this dreadful history of me having to drive out in the middle of the night to pick him up because one of my cars shot craps, but anyway.
Yeah, I can't remember if we shared this story, but I was driving down last time I was in his Jeep. And I do some work for Brian. If everybody's wondering, why is Shane riding, you know, driving Brian's vehicles? It's a work Jeep. And anyway, driving down I-35, 70 miles per hour at night. And apparently
pitch black.
Pitch black. And apparently there's some post-market security feature that malfunctioned. And the lights just went off. And the horn was honking. And I was like, what the heck is going on here? So that was a lot of fun. Anyway,
I know you did this to me on purpose.
Yes, yeah, I'm the one that actually cut the wire, whatever. Yeah. You know,
I wouldn't put that past you.
You know, I don't have the mechanical knowledge to do that.
Okay.
So, see, I have a good self defense here. Hey, anyway, we have a very special guest in the line, and he's thinking, are you guys ever going to get to me? We have Drew Klein, who's the Iowa State Director of Americans for Prosperity. He's been a guest, I think, a couple different times, at least, on our show. And welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, Drew.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, glad you can
be
on.
He's a friend of the show.
He is.
He's been here more than once, and he keeps coming back. What's wrong
glad
with this
punishment,
guy?
Punishment, evidently. So.
Transmission problems and all. I'm coming back.
Yeah, awesome. So, Americans for Prosperity, Iowa, announced that it would be continuing efforts to eliminate the state's corporate income tax after a model created by Massachusetts-based Turek Foundation. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it right.
Yeah, the Turek Foundation, yep.
Yeah, demonstrated that eliminating the state's corporate income tax would create almost 3,000 jobs and increase investment by nearly $1 billion. So... It's too bad this didn't come out like before the legislative session. So
I think the legislative session proved that regardless of what information was available, they weren't really doing anything this year. So I'm not sure how much that mattered, but
that's true.
But yeah, no, we definitely wanted to roll this out now and hopefully with information like this and the work that Americans for Prosperity is doing year in and year out talking to citizens door to door. Hopefully this becomes a narrative piece as we work through another election cycle as well about how we move the state forward.
Yeah, definitely. So just let's dig into the details with this report that the Turek Foundation came, the model created by them came out with. So how does this create almost 3,000 jobs? Where are they getting this data from?
Yeah, well, I think this is this gets back into kind of the fundamental understanding of how taxes affect the economy. And so right now, Iowa has the highest marginal corporate income tax rate in the country. According to the Tax Foundation, we rank 40th in overall tax climate. I think we're a little worse than that if you just look at business taxes.
Right.
And so what that ends up doing is because of that higher tax, then businesses see a diminished return on any capital investment that they make, which then, of course, decreases their ability to create more jobs, expand their business, in general, keep the economy growing here in Iowa. And I think that's effectively what we see in the state is that our tax climate across the board really inhibits good economic growth, which, of course, is an inhibiting factor for just overall population growth as well. And so that's where that 3,000 number comes from, is if we can eliminate the burden on these corporations and let innovators innovate, let entrepreneurs create those jobs, that's what they want to do.
Yes, as they noted that a cut in the corporate income tax would increase revenue for state and local government, which is kind of, that seems counterintuitive. How's that, how would that be the case?
Is that coming through payroll taxes? Is that how that's supposed
yep.
to be?
So when,
okay.
Yeah, so when you look at one of the other findings that it had is it would increase essentially disposable income by about $510 million in the state of Iowa. Now, that money is likely going to be spent, or at least a portion of it is going to be spent on something, whether that's creating even more jobs, whether that's buying a nicer house, whether that's just more disposable income for people to pour back into the economy.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see increase in sales tax. You're going to see an increase in property taxes. You're going to see increases in other revenue streams, many of which are going to end up in local government coffers rather than being poured back into the state. And I think, as a limited government advocate, most of the time I would rather those dollars be spent at the local level, because we know that government closest to the problem is generally the location best able to address those problems as well.
Right.
Or at least that they won't screw it up quite so bad.
Well, or if they do screw it up, it affects fewer people.
So right now we kind of have a system of it's kind of a patchwork, right, of different tax cuts and different subsidies and different incentives to draw corporations in.
Which Governor Branstad has been, shall we say, fairly effective at utilizing.
Right.
Yeah, and this is really a problem that we identify as being one on both sides of the aisle as far as politically, is that, the way that we have tried to induce economic development in the state of Iowa is that we've created a whole host of tax credit schemes, various subsidies, different things, and at times we've spent up to $350 million a year on corporate welfare is really what it is. We're letting government pick winners and losers by throwing some of our tax money at companies that they're hoping to attract to the state of Iowa or ones that they want to expand their operation, whatever it is. So we're essentially taking money from some taxpayers to hopefully buy jobs from other taxpayers. And at times, through some of the different tax credits, not only have we reduced a company's tax burden, we've actually made it so that they have a negative tax liability. We're literally paying them to exist in Iowa.
Oh.
And that's a fundamentally flawed approach.
That's got to be sustainable.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bad approach not only to taxes, but to economic development as well. And it's really an example of robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Right. You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Drew Klein, who's the Iowa State Director for Americans for Prosperity. So, basically, I'm thinking, what are some state models we could look at where we could see this working?
Yeah, I mean, there are, I believe, 9 states right now that don't have a corporate income tax. Good examples of those are South Dakota, Alaska, Texas, Florida. There are a number of others, but in general, look to the states that are growing, and you'll discover that most of them don't have a corporate income tax.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, you know, Northwest Iowa has got to be hurting in some instances. I know they've lost business. So like, if I'm a business owner, and say I even live in Sioux City, I'm thinking, maybe I want to locate my business in Dakota Dunes instead, you know?
Yep. Falls is not that far away. Yeah, you're right. That Siouxland area is seeing a lot of economic growth, but the majority of it is happening outside of Iowa, where the tax environment is more competitive, unless, of course, Iowa comes in with a big incentives package, which, again, we're saying is a fundamentally flawed approach to try to attract.
Right, and when they do that, I mean, they're doing that for the big guys. They're not doing that for the small business creators. I mean,
that's,
you know,
right.
You're on your own. And what's frustrating is these big guys, they could launch a business in Iowa without all that. So it is frustrating. Yeah, this is definitely, we don't have a fair playing field.
Yeah, I was just going to say that this would, in effect, level the playing field, whether you're a small business or you're a huge international corporation.
Yeah, and it would make it easier to start that business as well, because a lot of business owners, if you're a small to medium-sized business right now, you're trying to find ways to classify yourself as something other than a corporation so that you don't have to deal with Iowa's corporate income tax. And some people manage to do that, but either way, it's an undue burden. But if you're a company that's outside of Iowa that's looking for a place to relocate, we've pretty much put up a sign on the outside that said, we don't really want you, unless, of course, you can buy the political favors of those folks sitting here in Des Moines at the Iowa Department of Economic Development or in the governor's office, the legislature, wherever that is, so that they can create a new incentive for you.
Right. With that being the case, Drew, do you see some bipartisan support for this sort of initiative?
You know, there is definitely bipartisan support for eliminating a lot of the economic development packages that the state has become so well known for. Of course, you know, the ability to then convince, specifically some of the more liberal members that we also then want to go ahead and eliminate the corporate income tax may be a little bit more difficult, but I think there is an understanding that what we're doing right now is a broken system and,
right,
and that we need to do something to fix it.
Well, just looking at the report here that they released, Iowa ranks third in the nation in its ability to promote economic growth and increase personal income, that we've enjoyed strong employment growth on a per capita basis, ranking sixth in the nation by that measure. We have an educational system that prepares students well for work. Well, that could be debatable. That's a whole different topic. A large portion of its workforce has more than a high school education. Anyway, but on the downside, we got this poor reputation. It's like we have so much potential if they would just allow us to unleash it, right?
Yeah, I mean, we offer, I think, a whole host of things that companies are looking for when they expand or relocate. I think the standard of living in Iowa is greater than it is in many other locations,
that's
many
right,
other states around the country.
It's a high quality of life.
Of living.
A high quality of life.
That's right. That's right. Well, and we have not only that, but we have a low cost of living. Property is cheaper here. There are a number of benefits that we can promote. But generally speaking, when companies are doing that initial scan, they see the highest corporate income tax rate in the country. They see a number of other financial burdens to the success of their business. And so we're going to get written off pretty quickly.
So basically there would be some job losses, though, as a result of getting rid of the corporate income tax, though, wouldn't there be?
Yeah, there's going to be, there's going to be fewer state jobs that are available because of the loss of revenue to state government. And quite frankly, I think that's something else that we should be pushing our state legislature for. Right now, Iowa has one of the highest, ratios of public employees to population size. And so that's something that I think needs to be brought back into line anyway. I guess when I see, a reduction in the size of state government, I don't really think about that as jobs lost. Rather, I see that again as a reduction in the burden on taxpayers in the state of Iowa. And I that's where we need to go anyway.
You heartless capitalist?
AFSCME would have to beg to differ.
Well, I'm sure AFSCME would beg to differ on a lot of things that I advocate for. In addition to the reduction in or elimination of the corporate income tax rate, I think we need to eliminate collective bargaining for state employees. I think there are a number of reforms that we need to pursue, and AFP is talking about a whole host of issues, and your listeners can check that out at reformiowa.com. But again, we think about these as kind of these entitled, never-ending jobs, and that's not really what state government should be. We need to bring it back in line with kind of the realities that we see in the private sector, where companies respond to market signals and are looking for ways to become more efficient. And I think that's one of the reasons that people get so frustrated with state government, is that there's no desire to become more efficient, that there's, you know, as Reagan said, the closest thing to eternal life on earth is a government program or a government job. These things just never end. And I think this is a way for us to force them to deal with reality again.
Right. So we got a year, not quite a year, about 9 months, I guess, to convince legislators to act on this. Right. So I encourage your listeners to go to reformiowa.com. Check out this report as well. Caffeinated Thoughts has the story up on our front page. Be sure to check out. It's AFP supports effort to eliminate corporate income tax in Iowa. There's a link to the report. Thank you so much for Drew coming on. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Drew.
Hey, thanks for good.
All right, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio was brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
Well, Donald Trump is the presumptive nominee. GOP
Shudder.
Nominee. Yep. So it's official this week. And
hey, can we get Lurch doing the groan?
That would be wonderful, wouldn't it?
And one thing I wrote on Facebook, and that's been kind of open to interpretation for a lot of different people, because I was kind of shocked about how much debate actually sparked on this, is that God is still in control. He'll either give us the leader that we need
or the one that we deserve.
And somebody accused me of, you're blaming God for Donald Trump.
Ugh.
First of all, no, this is, God allows us. Obviously, there's means we vote, you know, and we get the leader that we deserve or we need based on, you know, the means that we have available to us.
Well, but the scripture is plain on this point.
Right. You read through the Old Testament, it's God. And you read Romans 13, God instituted government. He's the one that sets it up. Donald Trump clinching the GOP nomination was no surprise to God. It's not like he was shocked by that fact.
No, the scriptures are absolutely explicit. Now, I'm trying to remember where the passage is, but it's God that puts those kings in place.
Right. Now, some people say, well, if God's in control and Donald Trump is the nomination, you just back Donald Trump. God was in control when Hitler was brought to power. Does that mean if I were a German citizen, I should vote and support Adolf Hitler? No, I'm not saying that Donald Trump is Adolf Hitler, but I'm just saying that argument has a lot of problems with it. I'm not obligated to vote. Now, if Donald Trump not only wins the nomination, which is a foregone conclusion, he'll pick up the delegates he needs by June 7th, barring some strange, catastrophe on his part. He will win the nomination on the first ballot of the Republican National Convention. Should he win the presidency, then as a follower of Christ, I'm obligated to pray for him.
That's right.
I still don't have to like him. I don't have to support him politically, but I certainly will pray for him. I've told several people, if he ends up being a great president, I will be delightfully surprised, and mm-hmm. I will issue a mea culpa.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
But I don't think that's the case. But anyway, Donald Trump tried to be presidential and praised Cruz in his victory speech after the Indiana primary. Let's play clip number one.
And just so you understand, Ted Cruz, I don't know if he likes me or if he doesn't like me, but he is one hell of a competitor. He is a tough, smart guy. And he has got an amazing future. He's got an amazing future. So I want to congratulate Ted. And I know how tough it is. It's tough. It's tough. I've had some moments where it was not looking so good. And it's not a great feeling.
Like when he went bankrupt.
And so I understand how Ted feels and Heidi.
Which time?
And their whole beautiful family. And I want to just say, though, that one tough competitor. And I can say that for... I can say that for the others. I mean, Chris Christie, who endorsed me.
Anyway, it's something that just occurred to me as I was listening to this. Is like, he uses terminology that he understands. For him, it's all about winning. So, of course, he's a tough competitor. Says nothing else about his character, about the strength of his convictions, about how he's a strong conservative, not how he's a defender of the Constitution. Some things that if I had beaten Ted Cruz in election, I would think of saying.
Yeah, but how's he going to say that after calling him Lying Ted for months?
That's right.
That's the problem.
That's problem too. We're going to skip over clip two for a second and get back to it. But he asked, I don't know if Ted Cruz likes me or doesn't like me. Well, I think we got the
clue.
We got the answer to that. That same day, before the Indiana primary results came out, Trump has, let's recount. He's called Ted Lion Ted since the Iowa caucus. He went after his wife, calling her ugly. He's accused using via National Enquirer. Ted of being, an adulterer, which I think is rich. And then he just recently.
Yeah, this is
put
this,
out there. And
this is
like,
the creme de la creme here.
Somehow, because the National Enquirer reports it, that maybe Rafael Cruz was involved in JFK's assassination. Huh? Okay. Anyway.
The day before the Indiana primary.
Right. So, the reporters wanted Cruz to respond to this latest thing. And this is probably the most I think Cruz is a pretty honest guy, despite, Trump calling him Lying Ted. But he's really held back on Donald Trump. And Cruz said, let me tell you what I really think.
Yeah, this time he took the gloves off.
Right.
I'm going to do something I haven't done for the entire campaign. For those of y'all who have traveled with me all across the country, I'm going to tell you what I really think of Donald Trump. This man is a pathological liar. He doesn't know the difference between truth and lies. He lies practically every word that comes out of his mouth. And in a pattern that I think is straight out of a psychology textbook. His response is to accuse everybody else of lying. He accuses everybody on that debate stage of lying. And it's simply a mindless yell. Whatever he does, he accuses everyone else of doing. The man cannot tell the truth, but he combines it with being a narcissist. A narcissist at a level I don't think this country's ever seen. Donald Trump is such a narcissist that Barack Obama looks at him and goes, "Dude, what's your problem?" Everything in Donald's world is about Donald.
Yep.
And he combines being a pathological liar. And I say pathological because I actually think Donald, if you hooked him up to a lie detector test, he could say one thing in the morning, one thing at noon, and one thing in the evening, all contradictory, and he'd pass the lie detector test each time. Whatever lie he's telling at that minute, he believes it. But the man is utterly amoral. Let me finish this, please. The man is utterly amoral. Morality does not exist for him. It's why he went after Heidi directly and smeared my wife, attacked her. Apparently, she's not pretty enough for Donald Trump. I may be biased, but I think if he's making that allegation, he's also legally blind. But Donald is a bully. You know, we just visited with fifth graders.
Okay,
every one of
probably
us knew
move
bullies
on here.
In element.
So,
did he ever get around to talking about the accusation about his father?
No, I think he tongue in cheek said, "Well, yeah."
Oh, gotcha.
You know, not that same time. It was a different time, but obviously it's ridiculous. So Donald Trump is a liar. He's pathological liar. He's a narcissist. I have to agree that Donald Trump, I think, is a bigger narcissist than Barack Obama. And that is
by far.
That's saying something.
By far.
That is, and an amoral. With the lying, the pathological lying, just give you an example. Just now saying he lies every other word. Okay, that's being pejorative, but just for instance, with rally attendance, I remember, I think it was a California rally. He said, "There are 31,000 people here. The facility only held 8,200 people."
Where's the problem?
In Fort Wayne, he said there were thousands of people waiting outside. I remember reading an article in the Federalist, Joy Pullman wrote, a friend of mine. And she went to his rally, and some people next to her, Trump fans, like, "Well, that's not true. We were one of the last ones in, and nobody's outside. There are thousands of people outside." He lies all the time. Little lies, big lies. And I think Cruz is right. I think he believes them most of the time.
What do you think, Shane, about this business when he was saying that nobody's a better Christian than me, or nobody reads the Bible as much as I do? Remember, I mean, does he... We're going to get it. The scary thought. We're going to get inside Donald's mind.
Does he believe that?
Yeah. I mean, does he really think that when he says that kind of outrageous stuff?
I would like to think no, but I'm not entirely sure.
I mean, this guy needs some serious couch time.
Yeah.
I mean, he needs to be diagnosed.
Well, yeah. And after, you know, I'm just saying after, you know, he brings up these things about Rafael Cruz, then after he wins, he's going to be the nominee. Ted Cruz suspended his campaign. I'd be tempted, if I were Ted Cruz, to unsuspend it after this. He goes and he doubles down on what he said about Rafael Cruz. Go ahead and play clip two.
Talk about unifying the party behind you. You had some kind words yesterday for Ted Cruz, but do you owe his father an apology for saying he was with Lee Harvey Oswald before JFK's assassination? You don't really have the evidence to back up that.
I was referring to a picture that was reported and in a magazine, and I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it. Now, I don't know what it was exactly, but it was a major story in a major publication, and it was picked up by many other publications.
It was the National Enquirer, and even the expert cited that it couldn't be sure.
The National Enquirer gave you John Edwards. It gave you O.J. Simpson. It gave you many, many things. I mean, You can't knock the National Enquirer.
You know, even a broken clock is right twice a day. How many times does National Enquirer need to be sued and lose
for you to realize that this is how many times do you have to see these absolutely ludicrous covers that they have and still hold them in high regard? I know they endorsed you, Donald, but they are not a purveyor of truth.
Well, and we talked about this off the air, Shane. The thing about this that I found fascinating was the fact that it was the day before the Indiana primary. His campaign had to know that he was going to have a big win the next day.
Right.
He had to know he was going to crush Ted Cruz the next day. Internal polling had to be there for him.
Right, right.
He could have just kept his mouth shut, acted presidential for once in this campaign. Instead, he comes out with this ludicrous, outrageous, over-the-top nutburger stuff about Rafael Cruz being in on the assassination of JFK the day before he's going to have a big victory in Indiana. It says a lot about what's going on inside of that guy's head.
And it doesn't say anything
or the lack
good.
Thereof.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's kind of scary, really.
It is. Gary Johnson, he's a libertarian. He's probably going to end up, he's the favorite to win the libertarian nomination. He's licking his chops because all these never Trumpers, he's like, here's an opportunity. He ran a video after Cruz's, or right before Cruz's loss.
Two-term Republican Governor Gary Johnson here. Like you, I'm not voting for Donald Trump. The press used to call me the most fiscally responsible governor in America, and that's because I felt it was my sacred duty to protect your tax money. Now that Donald Trump has taken advantage of a broken and divided GOP, I'm going to be the only presidential candidate who will stop Congress from raising taxes, who supports free trade, and who stands up for you. I left my state with a $1 billion surplus. We got the schools and the roads and the health care that my state wanted, but without raising taxes. Look, I can't support Trump. You can't either. We can fight for small government and conservative values. Just Google Gary Johnson and find out.
And then, of course, there's Austin Peterson, who's also a libertarian candidate. He had a video out as well trying to woo Cruz supporters and never Trump Republicans. They said also Google Austin Peterson. That must be a phrase that they like. Just go Google me. We have another clip. I think I'm going to bump that the third segment because we were running out of time. But Hillary Clinton's going to have a heyday too because she's not really going to have to. This is probably going to be one of the cheapest op research things that a campaign's ever had to do because it's just all like out there.
That's exactly right. They should be able to use a lot of that guy's, speaking of the Donald here, an awful lot of the things that he said in this campaign against him.
Right. And this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org. Before we get into some of our other news, I wanted to pick up that clip I mentioned last segment. Hillary Clinton ran an ad, and I think it kind of speaks for itself, but this is the type of thing that you're going to hear probably throughout the general election now. Go ahead and play clip five.
I am a unifier. We're going to be a unified party.
He is a con artist.
A phony.
Donald Trump is the know-nothing candidate.
These are all Republicans.
Is a bully.
This is an individual who mocked a disabled reporter.
I don't remember.
Who attributed a reporter's questions to her menstrual cycle.
Blood coming out of her wherever.
The most vulgar person to ever aspire to the presidency.
The man who seems to only feel big when he's trying to make other people look small.
Don't worry about it, little Margo.
Gentlemen, the man is utterly amoral.
The sign of deep insecurity and weakness.
The bullying, the greed, the showing off.
I'm really rich.
The misogyny, the absurd third grade theatrics.
Count to ten, Donald. Count to ten.
He's a race-baiting, xenophobic, religious bigot.
A narcissist at a level I don't think this country's ever seen.
He would not be the commander-in-chief we need to keep our country safe.
This guy is so unfit to be commander-in-chief.
His domestic policies would lead to recession. His foreign policies would make America and the world less safe.
I bring people together. Everybody loves me.
He needs therapy.
Bravo, Hillary Clinton.
Oh, man.
I have to give her campaign kudos because that was thoroughly entertaining to listen to.
Oh, it was fantastic.
So, yeah, he brings people together against him.
Everybody loves me. Wasn't that classic?
Yeah, everybody loves me.
Okay, next up in our ruse. Let's try that again. News rundown. According to the AP, House Speaker Paul Ryan is refusing to support Donald Trump as the Republican nominee for president, insisting Thursday that the businessman must do more to unify the GOP. That may be the understatement of the year.
Yep.
The surprise declaration from Ryan on CNN's The Lead amounted to a stunning rebuke of Trump from the Republican Party's highest-ranking office holder. I'm just not ready to do that at this point. I'm not there right now, the Wisconsin Republican said, and I hope to. I want to. But I think what is required is that we unify this party. There you think? Ryan had maintained his silence since Trump effectively clinched the nomination with a commanding win in Indiana on Tuesday that forced his last two remaining rivals from the race. What do you think about that, Shane Stewart?
Well, I hope Paul Ryan sticks to his guns because I know some conservatives believe that, you know, he's just establishment hack and he's trying to sabotage the, you know, the people's nominee. It's like in very few states did Donald Trump win a majority. So he's not the majority's choice. He's going to eventually have the majority of delegates because now people are out of the race. So there are a lot of people who are against Donald Trump. Now, there are a lot of Republicans who will end up voting for him because he is the nominee. And I've had some people, you know, say, well, the Never Trump movement's irrelevant. You're not going to stop Donald Trump. It's like it's never really been about that. The media's never really understood that. It's not so much a movement as it is a personal decision and a personal declaration. And I had to remind people when I said Never Trump back a month or two ago, that meant never on November 8th as well. Never means never.
Yep.
I will never vote for him. Whether people join me or not in that, that's irrelevant.
Well, I think any way you slice it, this is pretty courageous for Paul Ryan to say.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think it shows that the guy's got a backbone and he's got some principles. I mean, he's got to be just
more
shaking
so than
his
I
head.
More so, I think grassroots conservatives have given him credit for.
That's right. Okay, next up. This is from CNN. Some of Hillary Clinton's closest aides, including her longtime advisor, Huma Abedin. Is that how you say her last name?
Close enough.
Okay. Or Abedin.
Abedin.
Have provided interviews to federal investigators as the FBI probe into the security of her private email server nears completion. U.S. officials briefed on the investigation tell CNN. The investigation is still ongoing, but so far investigators haven't found evidence to prove that Clinton willfully violated the law, the U.S. officials say. Well, in any case, I hear that there's I hear she's going to do some testifying or some sort of interview or something with respect to the FBI probe recently.
Will she tell the truth? I'm not going to hold my breath on that.
You'd turn blue and die if you did.
Probably.
All right. Next one is from Reuters. The number of Americans filing for unemployment benefits rose more than they expected last week, posting the biggest gain in more than a year. But the underlying trend continued to point to a strengthening labor market. Another report on Thursday showed a 35% surge in planned layoffs by U.S.-based employers last month. Most of the announced job cuts were concentrated in the energy sector, which is reeling from low oil prices that have hurt profits. Initial claims for state unemployment benefits increased 17,000 to a seasonally adjusted 274,000 for the week of April 30th, the Labor Department said. Last week's increase was the largest since February of last year. So, you know, really the entirety of the Obama administration, and we can't lay all this at his feet, but certainly some of this economic trouble he owns,
right,
the entirety of the 8 years is going to be pretty dismal at the end of the day. And last but not least, this is from The Hill. Child migration is surging again. The number of families and unaccompanied children apprehended on the southern border has skyrocketed this year, according to new figures from the Obama administration. The numbers compiled by the U.S. Customs and Border Protection reveal that child migration is on par with 2014 levels. And that's when a wave of kids, thousands of them, unaccompanied, arrived at the southern border. The surge of illegal immigration quickly swamped border authorities, immigration courts, and health and humanitarian workers, while sparking a political battle on Capitol Hill over the cause and proper response to the crisis. The new figures raise the specter of another increase this summer. That would almost certainly inflame another political showdown in a volatile presidential year in which the issues of race, immigration, and border security have been pronounced, particularly due to the hardline enforcement approach adopted by presumptive GOP nominee Donald Trump. Through the first 6 months of fiscal 2016, which ended on March 31st, border officials apprehended 27,754 unaccompanied children.
Wow.
Think about that. 27,754 unaccompanied children, a 78% jump from the 15,616.
Now, I want to be clear that when they say children, they do mean under the age of majority, correct?
The age of what?
Under the age of majority, 18.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, they like the Obama administration with Obamacare likes they like stretching out adolescents to 25. So I want to, make sure. You don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, buddy. I don't know. But whatever it is, that's a scary number.
It is.
That's a lot of kids.
I mean, like, would you turn your teenager, over to such a journey as this?
Absolutely not.
Any way you slice it, it's just terrible.
I think you have to be in a desperate situation before you'd ever go for that.
Now, they are saying that family units, which they calculate as at least one child traveling with one adult, the increase was even more dramatic.
Wow. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
I don't have time for their drama. Have you ever said that? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries, and it's time to pause for peace. All too often, it is our busy lives that set us up for conflict. So when such obstructions hit, we have little time to do anything but react. Sadly, such reactions tend to complicate rather than correct the problem. This is why we encourage people to pause. PAUSE is a helpful acronym developed by Peacemaker Ministries designed to equip people to constructively pursue peace. The P stands for prepare. Self-defense training conditions the student to develop an action to counteract attack. Such preparedness protects the would-be victim from contributing to a vulnerable situation. In like fashion, times of conflict can be de-escalated by taking time to think before speaking. To read more about how you can be prepared for conflict, check out our website at crosswalkcounseling.org.
Hey, have you checked us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com? Because, you know, we don't only do this radio program. We blog, too. And you make sure you go to caffeinatedthoughts.com and check out all the daily updates. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Sign up for emails. Be our friend. We need them. I feel like I got fewer friends this week than I did last week.
And now we've come to my favorite part of the show. We are about to share a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet, you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up.
This is from Hong Kong. May 5th, according to UPI, and many of you no doubt have seen this online already.
I've seen it on Twitter.
It's been everywhere. Fast food giant KFC announced a new twist on its finger-licking good slogan. Edible nail polish designed to taste like chicken.
Ooh.
The chain's ad firm, Ogilvy & Mather, worked together with spice company McCormick. They got a plant over in Ankeny.
You bet.
The source of KFC's legendary 11 secret herbs and spices to create nail polish that tastes of original recipe and hot and spicy chicken.
So the nail polish.
Can't hear this ding dong. Avon calling. Here's your KFC.
Yeah. Avon probably won't sell this, but anyway.
The nail polishes are currently being marketed exclusively in Hong Kong.
That's just why? Just Hong Kong. Why not here?
If you have to ask.
I think Shane's wanting to buy himself a bottle or two.
Why are you wearing nail polish?
Consumers simply apply and dry like regular nail polish and then lick again and again and again, KFC said in a news release. The recipe for our edible nail polish is unique.
You think?
Maybe. And was specifically designed to hold the flavor, but also to dry with a glossy coat. I wonder if it's extra crispy. Similar to normal nail polish, Ogilvy creative director John Coe said, this campaign is designed to be intriguing and fun, to increase excitement around the KFC brand in Hong Kong.
So whether you're out on the town or at the beach, you'll not only look good, but taste good too.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, in the office, boss is complaining, these women, they just can't get anything done. They're constantly licking their fingers.
Anna Mugglestone, I would like to have a name like that. Anna Mugglestone, marketing and communications director for Ogilvy, said she was among the first to sample the product. I tried it myself in the office when they were doing the testing. It tastes like chicken. It's crazy. I don't know how they do it. Get this. The company also released a, quote, bizarre music video to announce the product.
Well, the bizarre music video makes sense because I don't know if people who live in Hong Kong are like people who are from South Korea. But have you seen some of the popular music videos from South Korea? It's like they go viral on YouTube. It's insane.
I wonder if it had either the video or the ad campaign has that creepy new Colonel Sanders in it.
Ooh, that could be.
I mean, you know what I mean.
The cartoon one?
No. They got a new...
The guy, the comedian. He's a stand-up comedian, I think, isn't he?
He's kind of creepy.
I guess I'm going to have to look for him. I haven't seen that guy.
Send your
Colonel Sanders.
Send your You Can't Make This Stuff Go Up Google ideas it. To story at caffeinatedthoughts.com. We'll give you the credit or the blame if we use your suggestion on the show.
So Google Colonel, Creepy Colonel Sanders and the Libertarian Party. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
Lick them fingers, next week. Folks. Lick those fingers.